This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. And John, it's always great to have you with us.
Always great to be here. Thank you.
Well, John, many times, especially with political races, we have gotten your predictions on who would win, who would lose. And I don't think there's any question I've ever asked you more often than whether or not this health care bill would pass. Each time you said no. Why in the end do you think that it didn't go the way you suspected it would?
Well, I think that's a little bit premature as a judgment, Greg. The fact is that as we speak, the Senate is going through the reconciliation process, and in 21 of the 22 occasions where reconciliation has been on the table, the Senate has sent a measure back to the House for another vote. And Orrin Hatch and other senators make it very emphatically clear that this is not over by any means. Why don't we talk when a final bill is there?
But the main bill is passed.
The main bill is passed, and yet you know as well as I do, and anyone who has taken high school civics knows, that when a bill is changed, even to a comma being changed in the Senate, the House has to vote again. The bills have to agree. I, for one, still do not understand how the president could get away with signing this on Tuesday afternoon. My own guess is that, yes, in the end, probably something will be there. But I'd have to say that when it comes down to why it is there and why there is this bill, one has to say that Congressman Bart Stupak of Michigan and some of the Democrats who insisted on pro-life language finally caved in the end. Up until 4 o'clock on Sunday, there was no indication that they were going to break, and all of the congressman's statements were that he was going to oppose it. And then the president came down with his executive order, which even Mr. Stupak's own church's American Catholic Bishops Conference said is overridden by legislation. Anyone knows that, and yet he bought it, and the rest is history. Had Stupak and company stayed firm and solid, there would have been no bill, and we would be having a different discussion right now.
That definitely was a key factor. John, it's interesting that in the days following the vote, and even in the day or two since the president signed the original bill into law, that the talking points of the two parties have been very different. Republicans have been talking about replace and repeal. They might make that a major theme of this year's midterm elections, whereas the Democrats seem to be focusing on, yes, that they passed the bill, but more on the antics of a few Tea Party protesters. What do you make of all the attention that they and then, in turn, the mainstream media are giving some of these actions that obviously have been unjustifiable?
Well, when you talk about the Tea Party activists, they are engaged in activity of protest, and we know that. We certainly read about it. On the other hand, Greg, I find it very interesting that Republicans talk about the substance of the bill and that the Democrats, who passed it along a party-line vote with only 34 desertions, talk about antics, insults, and all kinds of tactics that were used. I find it interesting that Congresswoman Kathy Dahlkemper of Pennsylvania was reported to have left her office along with her staff by a window because she did not want to deal with the angry protesters coming to her office. Strange way for a congressman to deal with constituents who don't agree with her. I have to say that this has fueled Republicans and put up a whole new list of Democratic congressmen who could be vulnerable this time. Given the fury, the anger, and the numbers that are out there, not to mention the polls and the lawsuits, I would bet now that the chances are quite excellent that Republicans will have a repeat of 1994. In fact, this could be 1994 redone and much greater.
John, a couple quick follow-up questions. First of all, I'm never giving up on you as a prognosticator. So will the reconciliation bill of fixes to the original bill become law?
Well, again, one has to say that these fixes have been sent back. There have been second votes again, and yet reconciliation has seen much of the original bills passed. I cite welfare reform, the COBRA health care plan, and, of course, the SCHIP health care plan for students and in different states, all of which came through the reconciliation process. Now, that said, never has reconciliation been applied to something that has such a dramatic effect on the American economy. In fact, affects nearly 17% of the American economy. So something different could happen. I find it interesting that members are amending the legislation right and left, and that in the Votorama process, many new bills could come into it, or amendments could come into it that could change it. I believe the most amendments that have ever been offered in that process are 54. We'll see if it's exceeded this time.
John, let's move on to another major issue now. And there wasn't a lot of media coverage of this because the media wasn't allowed to cover it. And that's the visit of Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to the White House. Obviously, the Obama administration upset with some new Israeli construction plans, which they say are in disputed territory. Netanyahu says they're just in the capital city of Jerusalem. Israel wants more help from the U.S. in deterring an Iranian nuclear program. What's your sense on the state of relations and what, if anything, was accomplished this week?
Well, this brought back a memory of something that is a little bit different. But when the then housing minister, Ariel Sharon, came to Washington in 1990, the administration of the elder George Bush made it clear that they were not to have official meetings with him in any way because of, guess what, the construction of housing sites in the Palestinian territory. Now, that said, the Secretary of Housing and Urban Development went to the Israeli embassy to meet with Sharon at the time, believing that by him going there and not meeting him on official ground, he was following the instructions of the president. That was the late Jack Kemp. In this case, it is a case of no meetings being canceled or forbidden, but cameras being kept out of the meetings within the White House, and that is very unusual at this time. The worst-kept secret in Washington and in Tel Aviv is the very cold relations between Benjamin Netanyahu, a man of the right, and Barack Obama, a man of the left. And this certainly has not helped relations in any way. And when Israeli and Washington relations are at a low ebb, it's probably best not to draw attention to the subject.
John, on a lighter note, but also a somber note, last week you and I talked about the passing of the legendary actor Peter Graves, and you remarked on his career, another passing of a legendary actor, one who you know pretty well for a long time, Fess Parker, better known as Davy Crockett.
Yes, he was better known as Davy Crockett and Daniel Boone.
Correct.
And at least a generation of young American boys wore the coonskin cap. Everybody, it seemed, was wearing it at one point. Fess Parker was, among other things, an actor. He was also someone who went to law school, served in the military, and phased out his acting career in the 1970s in order to pursue business interests. And he pursued it with the same gusto that Davy Crockett hunted bears. He built a luxury hotel. He built a winery. He developed new properties in the Silicon Valley. And in all things that he took on, he was a success. He was also someone who was a strong conservative Republican. You're not going to read that in the obituaries in the paper, and that's where he and I finally met. I interviewed him in 1985 when he was seriously considering running for the U.S. Senate from California. He felt that his dealings with the bureaucracy and government and the success he had could help him help others with their own problem with government bureaucracy. We had a fascinating discussion. I was astonished with the depth of his knowledge, not only on economics and business issues, but on foreign policy. In the end, he decided not to run, but he remained active in Republican politics. In 1998, I was covering a special election in California. Conservatives and Human Events all backed Tom Bordenaro, a right-of-center assemblyman. Fess Parker, a conservative, backed the liberal Republican, Brooks Firestone. Well, I kidded him about that and said he was going soft. He just laughed. He was a friend and a neighbor of Brooks Firestone and said, "Let's talk about it over lunch, old friend." And with Fess Parker, as it was with me, Firestone, and everyone else, friendship trumped all. I'll miss him.
John, very well said. Thank you very much, as always, for your time this week.
Getting ready and hoping that Congress does to the health care bill what Davy Crockett did to that bar. I'm John Gizzi.
John Gizzi, political editor at Human Events, the National Conservative Weekly. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America, reporting for WorldNet Daily.